Bob.
Thanks. Well, first of all, thank you both, Robert and Anthony and Vajra, for your informative reports. Robert, thank you for your service. And I just wanted to ask you about the one issue that Vajra mentioned, which has been of great concern to many of the staff and to this board, as she also referred to the motion concerning the management's proposed pay cuts and the withholding of the cost of living increase that was contractually required for last October. So what this board mandated was that the contract, the AFRA contract, had to be followed fully, and that there needed to be consultation with both AFRA and the unpaid staff union. And I just wanted to check with you on the status of that process, because that was supposed to have taken effect. Management wanted those cuts to take effect, I believe, in October, and so it's now 3 months later. So did the consultation happen? Was the union contract followed? I know that AFRA filed a grievance saying that the contract was not followed. So where is that process?
Well, I guess we're still in the grievance process. We did meet with AFRA, but according to the CFO and the when we did the budget, this is what we had to do. So we're in the grievance process at this point, but I don't know what happens after that. They sent a letter saying they filed a grievance, but I haven't heard from them since then. Well, we're supposed to have a meeting with them next week, but...
But were they consulted with before?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
And what about the unpaid staff union?
Yes.
There's been a consultation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Anthony, congratulations and welcome. And it's really terrific that someone such a high caliber has agreed to take on such a challenging responsibility. I just actually wanted to ask you, because I was one of the people who was privileged to be part of the interview that the staff had with you, if you could share briefly with the community here some of your very notable background in media and the kind of some of the qualifications that you bring to bear to the job, and also a little about your vision, because that was, I think, one of the things that, aside from your incredible resume, was also your commitment and your understanding and deep passion about the mission of Pacifica and why you wanted to assume this position.
Okay, that's actually a sort of a big mouthful to have to do. All right. Well, anyway. Okay. I've been involved in community media for pretty much my whole adult life. My father was an artist. He was a visual artist. And I was raised in California during the what was called the Black Arts Movement, where we were all, as his kids, given the understanding that there's no art that existed outside of its context within the community. And when you're in communities that have needs, that it's a luxury to be able to do art that doesn't meet those needs. And so I originally had intended to be a filmmaker, but it wasn't for entertainment value. It was with the same understanding that even in terms of what we consider entertainment, that there's a cultural and political context, and that we needed to make sure that that met the needs of the communities that we represented. So I ended up working in public access, mostly because I couldn't afford to keep my camera out of pawn, and they had equipment, and I wasn't really seeing it as a political issue so much as the availability of channel time and equipment. But I soon began to realize that the nature of any media is that the way that the media is structured has a lot to do with who's going to be able to use it and how what structures it's going to be supportive of. So then, in other words, the media itself is sort of a higher form of structure, a higher form of content. That the way that an access channel is structured or the way that a radio station is structured is going to predetermine who gets to use it and what the message is going to be, so that the way that people plug into that is really a secondary matter to who owns the media how it's operated, what the processes are around it. And so in talking to the committee, I was talking about the things that I've learned in dealing with, I should say, I started off as a producer, then I ended up as a playback operator just because I hadn't had like a straight job in a while. I didn't want my resume to go completely crazy, so I took that job, and then eventually ended up as program manager because the program manager had left, and I was left with filling the schedule, and started understanding how important it was, the rules by, not the person, the rules by which the schedule is determined. And so then I ended up as general manager because the person in front of me left, so it's a little Peter principle going on here. I left from Atlanta, where I knew Robert, and went to Minneapolis and ran the Access Center in Minneapolis, and then joined the National Board of the Alliance for Community Media. Eventually, I became the board chair and later the international chair. And I left that for a while and came to New York for family reasons, and eventually ended up as the executive director for Manhattan Neighborhood Network here in Manhattan, which is about the largest access center in the country. Left Manhattan Neighborhood Network after almost 5 years. Ended up next working at the Funding Exchange in the Media Justice Fund, actually helped set up the Media Justice Fund at the Funding Exchange, which is supposed to fund projects that bridge the gap between general activism and media activism to help the people in the civil rights communities understand that media needs to be their second most important item on their agenda if they're going to accomplish the first, to help bridge their understanding that it's not about content, but that it's about community control, regulation, and so forth. After I left there to take over the executive director job at the Alliance, because the Alliance was going through, had gone through what we like to call the trouble, where there was extreme factionalism for a couple of years, and it really was damaging the organization. So I went ahead and worked with them.
You're referring to the Alliance for Community Media?
Alliance for Community Media, yes. I worked with them to try to heal that up and get them back on track. And incidentally, during this past 3-year period, we've had a series of sort of broadsides by the cable industry and the telephone industry to eliminate this community media. And in trying to prevent that, ended up working in large coalitions of folks that had to do with net neutrality, intellectual property, all sorts of different regulations having to do with community media and so forth. And so that's what I've been doing for the past few years. I've had the opportunity to go to a number of places around the world as well and talk about community media and why it's important and how it can develop in different places. All that having been said, I view this as really a great opportunity and extension of the same work. I think to some degree, the medium is not, the medium may be different, but the process of how this is done is what's most important. And I think, as I was mentioning to the committee, we only appear to be doing radio. What we're really doing is demonstrating a process of community. We're demonstrating a process of how people of disparate interests can come together around commonalities and develop processes.
It is true, but
it's never easy. This is the thing, and I've been having to talk to my staff about this too. A lot of times we know better what should be done, and sometimes we even know where things are going to go. But if we just go there directly, then we subvert a process that needs to take place. Now, the process is not fun sometimes, and it's not easy, and sometimes it's not efficient, but it's a good process, and the process is really what we're selling. So if we're going to be, so to speak, in this house up on a hill, where we can be seen, then it's not just the content that's going over the radio station. It's how people view our ability to work together, you know, towards a common goal, because this is the Pacifica Network, and the Pacifica Network is about how people can exist in a world of differences without resorting to physical violence or, I guess, in some ways, emotional or organizational violence to get there. And we have to be able to live that process in order to be able to demonstrate it to other people. So I think that's a prime thing. And then, of course, the other very important thing is, in Gwendolyn Brooks's words, you know, first you have to come to civilize a place wherein to play the violin with grace. If you don't have the ability to keep the place functioning on a material basis, then it doesn't matter what else you do. So that's also, you know, that's something that we as custodians have to keep a close eye on, is, you know, whether we can keep the places financially viable and growing in the public. So I'm getting hoarse.
Thank
that's
you very
enough.
Much. Okay.